Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Michael Wald, and you're listening to Ask the Blood Detective. And today's topic is a really important one. Like all the blood detective topics, of course, I'll say that, but it's true. These are the topics that you, the listening audience, wants to hear. So you've been emailing me your show ideas. You've been calling me with your show ideas, and I really appreciate that. And for those of you who would like to let me know your thoughts, whether they're positive, negative, or some variation in between, feel free to call me at 914-552-1442. That number is 914-552-1442. Or if you prefer to email your topics or your questions, you can email me at info@blooddetective.com. That's real easy. info@blooddetective.com. Today's topic I call Feed Your Brain, The Secrets of Neuroplasticity. Now, don't let the word neuroplasticity fool you, because It's a very important term, and you're going to hear more and more about it, particularly when my book on neuroplasticity is published later this year. Well, the word neuro, as you might imagine, is from the term neurologic. So neuroplasticity refers to the nervous system, which basically is your brain and your spinal cord and the nerves that come off of your spinal cord, which are called the peripheral nervous system because they go to the periphery of your body and or from the spinal cord, which is in the center of your body, right down the middle. So neuroplasticity, what is the term plasticity? Well, plasticity refers to the fact that the nervous system, again, that's your brain, your spinal cord, and your peripheral nerves, have the ability to reorganize themselves when damaged, or the ability to reorganize themselves to prevent damage or to stave off damage, to put off damage longer. Because inevitably, as aging human beings, we will all suffer from some amount of neurologic decline. Now, that neurologic decline might be mental. It might be something like Alzheimer's dementia, which is affecting far too many people these days. Roughly 30% of people over age 60 will develop some sort of memory loss. That is extreme. And a good number of those individuals will actually suffer from Alzheimer's dementia. Now, for the sake of simplicity, there are many different forms of dementia. And this show is not only about dementia. It basically is how to enhance the healing capacity of your brain. So no matter what age you are, whether you're 20 years old, and I've got young people listening to the show too, which is amazing. They're getting younger and younger and smarter and smarter. Or whether you're 50, 60, 70, 80, 90, I've even got 100-year-olds that I work with towards maximizing their neuroplasticity. In other words, maximizing the ability of the brain and nervous system. And from now on, I'll just call it the brain. But when I say brain, I mean the whole nervous system. To enhance the nervous system's ability or brain's ability to reorganize itself in the face of injury. There are many different types of ways in which our brains become injured. One of those ways is based on genetics. You may have a genetic predisposition to what's called brain atrophy or shrinking. You might have a genetic predisposition to accumulating heavy metals such as mercury, aluminum, cadmium, for example, and other toxins like arsenic. I mean, the list of toxins goes on, and many of them are known to be neurotoxic. They're found in herbicides, pesticides, fungicides, and in every breath that you take and every glass of water that you drink practically, and the foods that you eat all have some measurable amount of toxins. And given your genetics, you might have more or less of a propensity for these toxins to deposit themselves in your brain. Now, the brain is a fatty tissue. So the toxins that affect the brain and nervous system are known as fat soluble. And those are really tough toxins to get rid of. You know, to digress for a moment, there isn't a day that goes by when someone doesn't call me and say, Dr. Wald, I am doing a detox, and et cetera, et cetera. And I'll say, well, what are you trying to detoxify? And they say, well, what do you mean? And I say, well, why are you doing a detox? And they might say something like, well, because I heard it was healthy for me. And I'm like, well, it could potentially be healthy for you if it's done right, and it could potentially really hurt you if detox is done wrong. But then I suggest to that individual that the detox plan that you should consider should be based upon what toxins you're talking about. For example, estrogen metabolites, which are toxic potentially, are detoxified very differently than, let's say, mercury. And then there are toxins produced by bad bugs in your intestinal tract, which produce what are called endotoxins, and they are detoxed yet another way. Different organs are enhanced in terms of their detoxification capacities with certain types of diets and with certain types of juicing methods, and certainly with certain types of nutritional supplements. For those of you who want a more detailed explanation of really, like, what is detoxification for real, you might want to listen to my show called Detox Deception, where I review a lot of the nonsense detox plans out there and how you know a detox effort is for real. And it's very important because these fat-soluble toxins, and there are hundreds of thousands of them, there could be millions of them on the planet, but the body is bombarded with them every day. And when it comes to the brain and neuroplasticity, when the brain's capacity to manage itself in the face of toxins or in the face of other causes of brain disruption, then the body and brain breaks down. So we mentioned how various toxins can cause disorganization in the brain, the shrinkage of neurons, which are nerve cells, and can affect what are called neurotransmitters, which are chemicals and compounds in the brain that allow for our thoughts, our feelings, our emotions, our memories to happen. So let's back up for a second and let me give a little anatomy lesson and a little bit of a physiology lesson of the brain. Basically, as I mentioned, your brain is fatty, and the brain is composed of brain cells. And brain cells are generally composed of neurons. There are different types of brain cells, by the way. There are astrocytes and all other Schwann cells and all these funny sounding terms. But for the purpose of this radio show, you really want to know that the fundamental unit in the brain cell is the neuron. And if you think of a neuron as a tree that's lying down on the ground, and then at the head of that tree, if you put another tree, and at the head of that tree, you put another tree, think of the neurons as one after the other, passing messages from one to the other. Now, where those trees connect, imagine there was at the top of one tree, as I mentioned, there's another tree, etc. But if you had a little bit of space, let's say a couple of feet between the trees, that space in between the trees, or that space in between the neurons, is called the synapse. And the synapse is, generally speaking, an empty space. And the tree or the neuron will produce and secrete into that space neurotransmitters. And that particular neurotransmitter, and there are several different types of neurotransmitters, again, some of them from memory, some of them from mood, some of them for sleep, various behaviors, the list goes on and on. They're secreted in that space, and they make their way to the next tree, to the next neuron. And there are receptors which receive the neurotransmitter. And problems with the plasticity of the brain might involve those trees, let's say, being broken, or those trees shriveling up. Or imagine those trees were wearing a nice suit. That suit is a covering. And surrounding neurons are different types of nervous tissue, like white matter. And if the white matter is disturbed, then the nerve impulses that should propagate or travel through the brain do not do that. So, for example, multiple sclerosis is an autoimmune neurologic disease where the immune system attacks a particular part of the brain called the white matter. And the white matter has to do with various functions in the body. And in multiple sclerosis, plaques form in the white matter. That word is plaques, P-L-A-Q-U-E. And the plaque is sort of like a hardened area of oxidative degeneration. And just like an old garden hose you leave out in the sun that gets hard areas, it can crack. It certainly will cause leaks. And simply put, it will not allow nerve impulses to properly cross it. So if these plaques in the white matter of the brains of someone with multiple sclerosis are affected, let's say in the area that controls the legs, then that person would have problems walking or with coordination or power, or they might have numbness or tingling. Now, it's not only those with multiple sclerosis that have plaques. Now, what we're talking about here are examples of how the brain degenerates. And I'm going to go over these, and then what I'll do afterwards is go over ways in which, for all of these health problems, some of which you may have and not know it, you can use a healthy lifestyle, including diet and nutritional supplements, to either reverse some of these changes or to slow them down, or in one way or another, enhance the brain's ability to repair itself. Sometimes the brain compensates by having other areas of the brain take up the job, let's say, of a degenerative area. So for example, when someone has a stroke, they might have, let's say, difficulty with their speech. And that stroke has affected the speech center of the brain specifically. But if it affected, let's say, the diaphragm area of the brain, that individual who just had a stroke might simply die of respiratory arrest because they could not move their diaphragm to get oxygen in their lungs. Now, let's go back to plaques for a second. I was about to say that it's not only those with multiple sclerosis that have plaques. In fact, approximately 20% of the general population, which means 20% of this listening audience right now, has plaques. You may not know that you have plaques. You may not have symptoms. You know what they say? Well, here's what I say as the blood detective. This is what we call blood detective common sense. You will not have symptoms until you have symptoms. Sometimes a problem has to get to a certain point where the body cannot compensate any longer. And then a person has symptoms. And they'll say to me, "Dr. Wald, how come all of a sudden I had difficulty walking? Why is it all of a sudden I can't remember things? Why is it that I can't retain information like I did? Why do I feel depressed? Why am I anxious? Why do I have numbness and tingling? Why don't I just, I don't feel the same?" All of these symptoms and signs and many, many more can mean that you have a certain amount of brain degeneration. So if so many people have plaques, how come they don't have symptoms? Well, they might. They might not be recognizing their chronic constipation as a problem with their brain, because the brain sends the nerves to the colon, which causes the colon to contract. So you can see that a simple symptom like constipation in the right context could be a neurological problem. So we talked about these plaques. Now, a person may have plaques scattered throughout their brain, and the plaques would form over time. But when enough plaques form and the brain cannot continue to compensate for those plaques, then all of a sudden a person might have problems. So what do? A person with various brain issues, let's say stroke, multiple sclerosis, what we'll call minimal brain dysfunction, Alzheimer's disease, they would generally visit a neurologist. And that neurologist, for the memory issues of, let's say, resulting from Alzheimer's dementia, would prescribe medications. And sadly, the medications for dementia, they really do not work. Statistically speaking, they are a failure. When it comes to multiple sclerosis, there are several medications used, that a few of which might slow the course of the disease somewhat, but again, miserable failure in the area of multiple sclerosis. As far as general plaque formation, and remember I said that plaques can form in your brain, just areas of degeneration, which do not have to mean multiple sclerosis. But they do mean that there's been some insult or insults to your brain that have caused these plaques. And you can see these plaques on an MRI that either is performed with or without contrast. Some of you are concerned about MRIs. MRIs are non-irradiating. The contrast material used is a little bit more controversial, but the point is, if you really wanted to know what was going on in your brain in terms of plaquing, you would have no choice but to do an MRI. I do see patients, though, that just refuse. They do not want these tests. So we make certain assumptions, and we take a general approach for improving neuroplasticity of their brain through nutrition. On the other hand, a person can have a completely normal-looking MRI or brain scan, and they can have very severe brain problems because our tests are simply not perfect. They miss things. And brain scans do not measure neurotransmitters. Neurotransmitters are those invisible chemicals on an MRI that are responsible for, again, nerve impulses to propagate or travel throughout the brain and throughout the body. If you don't have the right propagation of impulses to, let's say, the pleasure centers of the brain, you might have depression. Or to the sleep centers of the brain, you might have sleep problems. Or to your legs or your arms or your intestinal tract or your heart, and you would have the corresponding health problems in those areas. But in terms of ways that traditional medicine has for improving neuroplasticity, to the best of my knowledge, there are none except for medicine's effort to treat the cause of the obvious problem with the brain. So for example, if someone has a stroke and it's from thrombotic clots, a person would be given blood thinners that would help dissolve the clots. Whether or not they can reverse the adverse changes that have occurred, not everyone recovers all function after a stroke. So we talked about stroke and various types of dementia that can affect the brain. Aging itself may cause brain decay. It seems that as we get older, our brains tend to shrink. In other words, they tend to atrophy. But there are lots of other ways in which our brains can degenerate. For example, and this is amazing, there is a condition known as cerebellar ataxia. Cerebellar ataxia. Now, the cerebellum is an area of the brain in the back of the head. Has a number of functions, including coordination. And cerebellar ataxia is known to be caused by gluten. Yeah, it's amazing. I'm astounded that most physicians, including gastroenterologists, seem to kind of poo-poo the whole gluten sensitivity thing. Meaning if you don't have celiac disease, which is the worst form of gluten sensitivity, that you can't possibly have a gluten problem. This is, of course, an absurd concept. We even have a diagnostic code for it in medicine and healthcare called a non-celiac gluten intolerance, which means it exists. And cerebellar ataxia occurs in people from gluten that do not have celiac disease. And it causes all kinds of incoordination problems, falling, poor balance, dizziness. So my point here is that gluten can cause all kinds of neurologic problems, but so can many other foods, or I should say, foods that are deficient in certain nutrients. Deficiencies of vitamin B1 affect certain parts of what are called the spinal tracts, these tracts of nervous system that go up and down the spine. Problems with B12 are certainly known to affect neurologic function like memory and coordination and can degenerate nerves when someone is deficient, by the way. Many of you are thinking, well, wait a second, I was told I have high levels of B12 in my blood. Is that dangerous? No, not usually. As long as you don't have a folic acid deficiency, if you have high B12s according to your blood work, that has no meaning. And high is relative to the average individual who I think's level of B12 is simply too low anyway. So B12 and folic acid are B vitamins that are required for proper neurologic function. They're needed for certain areas of the brain and the spinal cord so that we have proper sensation, feeling, memory, coordination. Very, very important. If your diet was, let's say, deficient in amino acids that form a neurotransmitter called dopamine, you could be predisposed to another devastating brain condition or brain and brainstem condition known as Parkinson's disease. And Parkinson's disease is a horrific problem where the individual develops generally a slowness in their speech over time and in their walking. Eventually, if they live long enough, walking with very, very short steps, and develops what's called a masked facies, or a sort of a flat-looking face, void of expression. And the person, even worse, sadly, has full mental function, and they're suffering. Unlike Alzheimer's disease, which the patient eventually loses every sense of themselves, every memory, and they literally lose themselves. It's a horrible, horrible condition. I've had many patients with this condition. I can tell you something very important about it from a nutrition perspective. If you are aware and you have been diagnosed with Alzheimer's dementia and you are in the early stages, that is when you start your nutrition, if not before. If you have a family history of dementia, there are certain nutrients and a lifestyle you should take on, because there are studies that show you can delay the onset of Alzheimer's dementia. We might be able also to delay the onset of Parkinson's disease. So let's talk practically for a second. When we talk about diet, now I just did a show called something like What's Unhealthy About Healthy Diets. If you go to my blog at www.blooddetective.com or www.integratednutritionny.com, you'll see the radio shows under the blog section. And you also see videos on all different topics. I've got over 50 videos there under the video section. But at the top of the blog section, you'll see the show on the diets. The reason I mention it is this. There is no specific diet that is appropriate for MS, for Parkinson's disease, for neuropathies, for Alzheimer's dementia, for minimal brain dysfunction, for strokes. Sure, there are certain fundamental healthy concepts that we might find throughout all of these, let's say, different health problems, like not eating refined and processed sugars and carbohydrates, eliminating white flour and gluten, not consuming GMO foods, avoiding foods you're allergic to, not ever eating fried foods or foods with trans fatty acids. And you get the idea, the healthy diet. But if you have seizures as well and epilepsy, these are other special needs conditions like autism, Tourette's syndrome, Asperger's, all of these are neurologic. Do they involve other aspects of the body? Yes, they might involve the immune system, the inflammatory mediators, all of that. But these are neurologic conditions. And because of neurologic conditions, that basic healthy diet I just explained should be modified for not just the health problem. Let's take seizures, for example, or Parkinson's or Alzheimer's. The basic dietary change is those clean aspects of the diet I just mentioned, but a much higher content of foods that can create ketosis in the body. Now, ketosis is a state in which the brain and the nervous system is bathed in higher levels of ketone bodies than is usual. And ketones act as an energy source for repair for the brain and for the rest of the spinal cord. So spinal cord injuries and brain trauma, these are all fair game for us today when we're talking about save your brain. Whenever we're dealing with neurologic problems, we want to promote ketosis. The ketogenic diet, particularly the original one with high amounts of ice cream and meat, for example, that is not healthy to do for any reason. Did it work to reduce seizures in individuals earlier on? Yes, it did work, but they probably died of other diseases earlier than they needed to. But we can use nutrition, like my raspberry ketone complex. You can find that on the Blood Detective site, Raspberry Ketones Complete, it's called, where two pills are roughly equivalent, two capsules, to approximately a bowl of dehydrated raspberries. Raspberries are naturally high in ketones, not to mention that raspberries are among the healthiest fruits that you can consume. It's not enough to just eat those. One would also want to take medium chain triglyceride oils, MCT oils. Those of you who are worried about the triglyceride portion of the medium chain triglycerides, you don't have to worry about that if you have high triglycerides. It doesn't increase blood triglyceride levels. But the MCT oil, being an oil, creates a larger surface area for absorption in the intestinal tract and allows a person to reach ketosis without dramatic changes in the diet. And I know that because I'll measure blood and or urine ketones. Now, I want to backtrack for a minute. Anything, any brain issue at all, any neurologic problem at all, will share the common need for ketones. So raspberry ketone supreme and MCT oil are two fundamental nutrients you should be thinking of. And I see people all the time with the brain issues I just mentioned, plus a lot more, that have never even heard of MCTs or raspberry ketones. And I wonder, who are they seeing out there? I don't understand it. Now, let's say you have Alzheimer's dementia. We know that Alzheimer's dementia affects certain neurotransmitters in the brain, like norepinephrine. Actually, it's really acetylcholine. So that would mean a person with Alzheimer's dementia specifically would have a healthy basic diet like we talked about, with a heavy emphasis on MCT oils and raspberry ketones, and also they would need a diet that either emphasizes foods that are high in choline, like poultry, fish, meats, pasta, rice, egg-based dishes, but also spinach, beets, wheat, shellfish. These are all good sources of choline, even eggs and liver and peanuts. Now, a lot of those foods on that list are not so desirable. I'm personally a vegan, but I'm a vegan who had a diagnosis of multiple sclerosis when he was 18. I'm 52 now. I'll be 52 on February 9th. So on February 9th, I'll be uploading some videos of myself in the gym to show you what a 52-year-old can do who's never been on medication with the right diet based on his condition and his biologic needs in terms of blood, urine, and other types of tests. So rather than supplementing the diet with some of those unhealthy foods that I just mentioned, we might want someone to take acetylcholine as a dietary supplement, because at least when you do that, you have a countable amount of the product. You know what you're getting, and if you can get it in a pharmaceutical grade, that's much better and really needed. So for people who argue, oh, diet is more important than supplements and, you know, all of that, I say to you that depending on your health problem, diet alone may simply not be enough to make the difference, particularly when we're talking about real neurologic problems. Now, a common type of brain dysfunction is called minimal brain dysfunction. And folks, there's nothing minimal about it. It is horrible. It basically means you have your normal types of memory lapses. You find yourself in a room and you forgot what you walked in there to do. You put your keys in the refrigerator. You put the milk not back in the refrigerator in the cupboard, and you do this stuff too often, and your memory just starts to go. You don't remember things well enough. and you find yourself driving and you didn't know where you were for a second, and it starts to accumulate. This is the so-called minimal brain dysfunction that lots of people suffer from. That is an indication potentially of a brain breakdown, of a shriveling up of neurons. You know, we don't lose neurons as we age. They simply shrivel up. They don't work well. Our bodies do not produce the neurotransmitters we need. So what I usually do, among other things, is I will check someone's absorption of an amino acid called tryptophan. And tryptophan makes a very important neurotransmitter called serotonin, which we need for sleep, we need for elevation of mood, it helps with pain and sense of well-being. But if someone does not make tryptophan, they won't use several other amino acids, and 80%, folks, 80% of the neurotransmitters in your brain are made from amino acids from the diet, but you've got to absorb them, right? As I've said on Blood Detective many times, you are not what you eat, you are what you absorb. Now, back to the dietary and supplemental needs for the brain. We mentioned that we want to eat mostly a plant-based diet, but a plant-based diet will be insufficient in, let's say, protein sometimes, and even iron. And the problem, though, is this. It's fine to eat a plant-based diet. I mean, I just mentioned to you that I'm a vegan, so I'm, you know, essentially plant-based. But you'll want to take the proper nutritional supplements to help offset your potential risk of any neurologic decay. So I've been practicing 27 years, and I have seen people who have been on plant-based diets and vegan-based diets and simply what look on paper to be very healthy lifestyle plans. And they're seeing me because they still have chronic health problems. Some affect the brain, some affect other areas of the body. The reason I say this to you is because diet alone is not enough. And even if it is enough at the beginning, it's not going to continue to be enough because as we grow older, we start to malabsorb. We know that 50% of people over the age of 60 or something close to that do not absorb normally. And the symptoms of malabsorbing are the symptoms of your aging. It could be anything. You may not heal properly. You might have chronic health problems. And if you're not absorbing well, you can't fix anything. So people always say to me, Dr. Wald, I don't understand it. I'm taking all these supplements. Here they are. And they slam a big, you know, bag or two of supplements on my desk. And they'll say, look in them. And I'll say, well, you know, what's in them, what it says on the container doesn't tell me what you're absorbing. And then usually when I purview their supplements, a lot of them are store-bought nutrients and some of them are of very unreliable or questionable quality. So we just can't know what's going on there. But here's why I'm going down this road. Number one, the particular neurologic problem you have may have special nutritional needs. And then the particular way you want to eat may also require special nutritional adjustments. And the other factor is you might have specific genetic predispositions, certain diseases in your family history, and you yourself might have malabsorption, or you might have some other health problem or certain abnormalities in your blood work. Maybe your cholesterol is too high. Maybe your blood pressure is too high. Maybe you have metabolic syndrome, which is a combination of high blood sugar, high blood pressure, and high blood fats known to cause brain decay. Maybe you have hypoglycemia, low blood sugar known to damage the brain. Yeah, low blood sugar damages the brain. Thyroid function, hypothyroidism damages the brain. Hashimoto's hypothyroidism damages the brain. Hormonal deficits or deficiencies damage the brain. Chronic inflammation from any source, like autoimmune diseases, whether it's psoriasis, or Raynaud's disease, or multiple sclerosis, or lupus, Sjogren's disease, Hashimoto's thyroiditis, these all sorts of diabetes type 1 and 2, of autoimmune diseases that create levels of inflammatory mediators that damage brain cells. Again, shrinking neurons, affecting neurotransmitters, causing swelling of the brain, causing shrinkage or atrophy of the brain. Or maybe your brain is normal size, but certain aspects of your brain may not be dense enough in neurons. The neurotransmitters may be insufficient, so you suffer from things like, again, coordination issues, loss of power in your body, your legs, arm weakness. Your overall sense of well-being may be dulled. Your memory might be off. All sorts of, the nervous system has so many different functions. Now think of it. You have a brain, and then from the brain down to the ground is the spinal cord. And then out of the spinal cord, we have 32 pairs of spinal nerves, and they pierce all of your organs. If you have problems with your nervous system, you may have problems in all sorts of areas of your body. And when you go to a specialist in healthcare and medicine, and you present with one of these symptoms in one of these areas, they will look at those areas and often not at all think at all of the nervous system's role in causing your symptoms. I mentioned one earlier on in the show. Constipation, chronic constipation, particularly in those over 60, may be from a loss of neurologic function, loss of bladder control, all sorts of, I mean, everything and everything can go wrong when the nervous system goes wrong. You know, being in natural health for so long, and many of you listeners will know what I'm talking about, we're told things like, oh, the liver is the most important organ in the body, presumably because it is the organ of detox. Or someone else will say, no, 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 the intestinal tract, that's the most important system in the body. Well, I've got news for all of those people who say that. There is no single most important system in the body because all the systems in the body are not really systems. They're all one unit. We only call them systems because we've artificially divided the body up into pieces. And when we say that this or that system is the more important one, that's reductionist thinking, and that's usually the same criticism we give of medicine, that compartmentalizes the body. And then we see people in natural medicine doing it all the time. That's why the blood detective philosophy, the philosophy that I basically approach the world with, is a truly holistic and integrated philosophy where everything is connected, and it's not enough to just know that. So, for example, when I treat someone with a neurologic problem, I don't simply treat their brain. I don't simply give them nutrition for their brain. I might give them nutrition, let's say, for their intestinal tract because, for example, maybe they have what's called a leaky gut. So if someone has a leaky gut, they'll have bacteria and perhaps other organisms like fungi leak out into their circulation. And those organisms will release endotoxins, and those endotoxins may circulate to the brain, causing all sorts of brain problems. So to fix the brain problem, I might have to focus on the brain and the basic nutrition for the brain, but I would also have to focus on the leaky gut. And just swallowing a bunch of probiotics is not going to fix a leaky gut. That's a complex problem. And a leaky gut is not the cause of itself. It got leaky because of some other cause or causes. So any problem anywhere in the body can affect the brain and the rest of the nervous system, just as any problem in the brain and the nervous system, in reverse, can affect every cell, tissue, and organ system in the body. So let me talk about some more nutrition, specific examples of nutrition and certain neurologic problems. So I'm looking at a study from the Journal of Psychoneuroendocrinology. So that's a peer-reviewed journal, and they're talking about the relationship between the development of what's called visual attention, and our ability to look at something and really take it in. So we form memories. And we know that a deficiency or an insufficiency in the adrenal hormone DHEA is essential for visual attention. And they talk about how DHEA helps to improve neuroplasticity. And then again, this is in a traditional medical journal article. It's best to take DHEA starting at about 25 milligrams in the morning because that's when DHEA levels are the highest. And they, if they don't maintain themselves throughout the course of the day or they dip too soon, then the receptors in the brain for DHEA are a bit starved. And therefore, we can lose our ability to properly interpret and notice and pay attention to our environment, which is called visual attention. The other thing we know about DHEA is that it offsets brain atrophy. So it helps to offset brain shrinking, which makes sense because as DHEA declines after age 30, the brain usually starts to shrink. Here's one you know about in terms of improving and offsetting a loss of neuroplasticity. In other words, a loss of the brain's ability to repair itself. And it has to do with dietary quercetin. So dietary quercetin is found in red wine. So there's what they call epidemiological studies and some preclinical studies that indicate that quercetin, which is what's known as a polyphenol, in moderate consumption in the form of red wine might actually lower the relative risk for developing Alzheimer's dementia. Now, rather than focusing on red wines, I think it's better to take concentrated food products which contain quercetin, and I use my Detox 1, 2, 3, and 4 powders. I usually will start all of my patients on Detox 1 through 4, a half a scoop of each of these detox powders, which tastes very good, diluted in water to taste, which contain not only quercetin, but dozens of nutritional synergists, which give us a much better boost. Also, problems with wine is regular wine is loaded with sulfites and sulfates, which can be very neurologically damaging. Even organic wines have natural sulfates, for those of you and sulfites, for those of you who were thinking that. So once again, detox 1 through 4, there's a red, green, purple, and orange food concentrates, really what they are. And I put everyone on them because they will immediately augment the nutritional value of a healthy diet. Now let's talk about some very fascinating compounds that benefit neuroplasticity. And these polyphenols, you'll find them in Concord grape juice. Resveratrol is an example of one, and I make resveratrol as part of the Blood Detective line of products. It's a pharmaceutical grade polyphenol, and also grape seed polyphenol extract. So these preparations are what are known as bioactive dietary polyphenols, and according to the Department of Neurology at Mount Sinai, they studied these and they found out that there are brain targeting effects of these polyphenol compounds that can help correct something we haven't mentioned yet, but the dangerous effects of sleep deprivation upon what's known as memory consolidation. And these polyphenols work with all kinds of areas of the brain, funny sounding areas like the hippocampus. So it's very important that all of our diets are high in the polyphenols, and that also is in my Detox 1 through 4 products. And furthermore, in terms of the polyphenols, a completely different study had looked at standardized grape polyphenol preparations to improve what they called synaptic plasticity in people with metabolic syndrome. Remember, metabolic syndrome, well, they used mice in this study, but metabolic syndrome is the combination of high blood fats, high blood sugar, and high blood pressure. And metabolic syndrome causes all kinds of degenerative problems in the brain and in the body. But this study demonstrated that if one has a decent amount of polyphenols, that you can improve what they call brain connectivity and synaptic plasticity, which is essential for learning and memory and for keeping your memory. So detox 1 through 2, 3, and 4, a half a scoop of each if you're normal weight. If you're not normal weight, you want to take one level scoop of each of those, mix together all at once. Now, you're not going to detox, even though these products say detox 1 through 4. I use much higher doses of those for that process, although these foods help the body's normal detoxification. Now listen to this statement from the Journal of Biology Psychiatry or Biologic Psychiatry. It said that the frontoamygdalar networks, that's an area in the front of the brain, they're implicated in childhood psychiatric disorders characterized by high rates of what they call externalizing. So aggressiveness, non-compliant or oppositional behavior. So that frontal lobe of the brain is very, very important. And they go into how the area, that area of the brain and some related areas are affected in terms of degeneration, which can cause these psychiatric problems. So a lot of what we think are emotional problems or psychiatric problems are actually associated with degeneration in the brain. They noted with these problems that the cortex of the brain is, the thickness of the cortex is thinning. So various nutrients, DHEA, tribulus, pregnenolone hormone, which I usually use at about 10 milligrams as a starting dose. And of course, all these doses and these this whole conversation about specific dietary and nutritional suggestions, they're just for education. Each person really must look at their needs to figure these things out. And it's not enough just to take some of these nutrients and eat some of these foods. They need to match your metabolic needs as well. Otherwise, you're not wasting your efforts probably, but you're not maximizing your efforts to offset brain decay, we'll call it. And here's an amazing study from the Journal of Neurobiological Aging. Now, they're talking about here that, listen to this title, a diet enriched with plant sterols prevents the memory impairment induced by cholesterol loss. Cholesterol loss? Wait a minute. I thought cholesterol was bad. Yes and no, no and yes. Too much cholesterol will give you cardiovascular disease. Not enough cholesterol will increase your risk of a variety of cancers, but also all kinds of neurologic problems because the cell membranes in the brain are mostly made of cholesterol. So they say right here in the study that cholesterol reduction at the neuronal plasma membrane. That's what I just said. The cell membrane of the brain cells. If there is reduction in cholesterol, that has been related to what they call age-dependent cognitive decline. Well, there's a bit of a contradiction there because not everyone has a reduction of cholesterol in the plasma membranes of their brain cells as they age. So it's not simply from aging. So many of the health problems that we call aging are actually simply concomitant with aging, but they're not actually aging itself. So they use this particular mouse strain here, which they bred for cholesterol loss, and they noted cognitive impairment. But they were able to reverse that process by enriching the diet in plant sterols. And I've been using this for quite a long time. They also found that a diet which was low in plant sterols was very high. The brains of those with the diet low in plant sterols had what they called amyloid peptide level increases. Now, amyloid peptide is a bad, bad chemical. It's associated with Parkinson's, Alzheimer's disease, multiple sclerosis. A lot of forms of dementia have these adverse peptides. So good sources of sterols would be broccoli, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, dill, apples, avocados, tomatoes, and vegetable oils, for example. But again, I usually use supplementation of plant sterols as well. And a lot of these foods I just mentioned are in very high concentrations in my Detox 1 through 4 products. So let's move on to some other very interesting information. There's a Journal of Neurobiology that talked about the importance of steroid hormones. I mentioned them earlier. So steroid hormones like estrogens and DHEA and pregnenolone and progesterone, and there are a bunch of others. But here's what they say. Steroid hormones exert global effects. That means wide-ranging effects in organisms to produce coordinated physiologic responses, whereas at the local level, these hormones have specific effects. So they have specific effects in certain areas. For example, estrogen for, let's say, its role in the menstrual process. But in a global way, it's important for neuronal, it's a neuronal protectant. So estrogen levels are important for keeping the brain from shrinking and keeping neurons, well protected. And in fact, the article uses the word the term steroid-mediated neuroprotection. Steroid-mediated neuroprotection. Wow. Now, this doesn't mean you should run out and get yourself hormones, particularly these so-called natural hormones. Preferably, you want to use foods, diet, nutrition, exercise to improve your body's ability to make the hormones first. Then carefully select hormones, possibly, you know, under the care of an experienced healthcare provider. I'm looking at another study that looked at a very important neurotransmitter known as GABA. G-A-B-A, gamma-aminobutyric acid. Now, I've used GABA for a lot of years. It also is found in the form of a prescription drug known as Neurontin. And Neurontin's used by psychiatrists and neurologists mostly, and it's used for a number of reasons. In the neurologic fields, it's used for pain. In the psychiatric fields, it's used to enhance the effects of SSRI drugs, the serotonin uptake inhibiting medications, or the antidepressants, because GABA improves the receptors for serotonin. So serotonin improves mood. GABA improves the ability of those of the serotonin to sort of get noticed. But not only can GABA improve mood, GABA can reduce the sympathetic activity of the body, which generally causes aging overall and disease, and promotes inflammation. GABA helps sleep in many people. That therefore, it's best to be taken at night. And I use a GABA of 250 milligram strength with several herbal synergists that have, in my experience, have it work much better than just taking GABA alone. But GABA also helps pain, and as I mentioned, sleep and mood. So lots of important effects. There are receptors in the intestinal tract for GABA, so it is absorbed well orally. And I usually combine it too, when I'm trying to improve memory in an individual, I'll use something called a phenobut, actually, which is something we won't talk too much about it right now because of time. But the point is, though, that GABA, when combined with some of these other nutritional synergists, works a lot better for different problems. GABA, again, depression improvement, sense of well-being, sleep, pain, even intestinal function. And here's something important. There was a journal of biologic chemistry which looked at the interaction between what's called nitric oxide and certain brain chemicals known as brain-derived neurotrophic factors. And they looked at the importance of nitric oxide for helping what are called neuronal stem cells mature. And basically what they found is that nitric oxide has multiple roles involved in neuroprotection. So that means it helps offset neurodegeneration, and nitric oxide can enhance brain plasticity, right? Makes sense. So nitric oxide is good. So I check nitric oxide on patients, and I commonly find those levels low. Nitric oxide does lots of things, and one of the things it does is that it's needed for circulation. So it improves circulation to the brain. Now, what is amazing about nitric oxide is that it's needed for a certain biochemical pathway to work called the nitric oxide citrulline cycle. And in the process of that cycle working, it helps certain neuronal cells, what they call stem cells. You know, everyone knows what stem cells are. They're these early cells, and they help those early cells differentiate or form other important cells of the brain into neurons, other brain cells known as astrocytes and oligodendrocytes. So nitric oxide, very important. So I usually will use arginine, but not just arginine alone. Arginine with other amino acids in an arginine complex, I have that product on my site, to potentiate what's known as inducible nitric oxide. And that helps brain neuroplasticity, and you need brain neuroplasticity for so many things. Moving along. So just to recap for a moment, so whether we're talking about epilepsy. You know, every time a person has an epileptic seizure, they destroy brain cells. They lose neuroplasticity. So we want to make sure they have normal nitric oxide levels. We want to make sure that they have proper medium-chain triglycerides. And for those of you who asked me about coconut oil is about 25% medium-chain triglycerides. Why would I want 25% when I can have someone take medium-chain triglyceride in the form of my oil, MCT oil? I haven't mentioned yet the role of krill oil. Krill is particularly good for the brain. So I usually start a person with a gram or two of krill oil. Now, if someone is on blood thinners, including aspirin, Coumadin, you do not want to add any additional fish oil to your diet, and you do not want to add any additional vitamin K-containing foods. But again, whether we're talking about Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, stroke, minimal brain function issues like memory loss, quickness in thinking of things, delay in learning of things, mood and behavior, everything from depression to anxiety to reduction in stress tolerance, all of these areas are neurologic. So we want to supply certain fundamentals for the nervous system. What's really, really fascinating, and I mentioned this before briefly, is that hypoglycemia, which is low blood sugar, even low blood pressure can lead to problems in the brain. Because if the brain is starved of glucose, then brain cells can shrivel. If the brain is starved of blood, which can occur when someone has hypotension, from any number of causes, the person have hypotension just because they have low blood pressure from lack of exercise. People, by the way, that have hypotension, low blood pressure from being really fit, they don't have these degenerative issues in the brain. So, for example, I took my blood pressure early this morning and I was, 110 over 55. So that's hypotensive. Now, other than the fact that I have to be weary not to jump up out of my seat too fast because my blood might not get to my brain before I, feel dizzy, the fact that I'm so fit allows normal perfusion of nutrition and blood and oxygen to the brain. But if someone has hypotension from, let's say, heart disease or just weakness of the heart from years of inactivity, that can be a problem, causing brain decay. So we want to avoid hypoglycemia by eating small meals throughout the course of the day, grazing throughout the course of the day, lots of, fiber, both the soluble and insoluble foods, the right types of protein. This isn't a dietary show, but the concept is you want to fix the health problem that resulted in the hypoglycemia or the hypotension so that you can save your brain and enhance neuroplasticity effects, the body's ability or the brain's ability to heal itself. For example, with hypoglycemia, we know that chromium helps form something in the body called glucose tolerance factor, and we know that adequate amounts of chromium help protect the brain. I prefer a combination of a blood glucose synergist, which I have in my blood glucose supplement. But no supplement will replace diet, and diet cannot replace supplementation. Here's a few other quick things needed for neuronal health and brain health. Magnesium levels. It's not enough that you just take magnesium. Usually 3 or 4 different types of magnesium are needed to help brain cells replace themselves. The term for that replacement, that repair, is neuronal differentiation. And I've been talking about nutrition, but I want a quick mention of a technique known as transcranial direct current stimulation. This is the application of direct current to the brain from outside of the skull. It's completely external and non-invasive, and that improves neuroplasticity, at least in mice. But I've seen a number of human studies, and it's incredible. And of course, in this hour, I've only been able to touch on some of the most basic things for neuroplasticity. The neuroplasticity potential can be met by taking care of your individual problems. So I want to thank you so much for joining me today, everyone. My name is Dr. Michael Wald. I'm supervisor of nutrition at Integrated Nutrition of Mount Kisco, which is located an hour north of New York City. I want you to call me if you want to work with me, or call me with your show topic ideas at 914-552-1000. 1442, or you can email me questions, email me ideas at info@blooddetective.com. And the website is www.integratednutritionny.com. Join me next time for what I promise will be another fascinating and practical topic for your health and the health of your loved ones. Thanks so much for joining me. Take care.